always in Berlin, and we're really blessed to have His Holiness Such an Anand Maharaj with us. So I hope, I'm sure we'll have a beautiful evening. I'll share some thoughts with you. His Holiness Such an Anand Maharaj will also speak, and then we'll leave some time for discussion, for questions and answers, so we can hear what's on all of your minds and hopefully make it relevant for you. Does that sound okay? Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Hare Krishna, everyone. So, I was thinking what we could discuss this afternoon. And before I read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, I was thinking there's something in the world which can be the greatest source of happiness and simultaneously the greatest cause of frustration. If I asked you, what in the world can be the greatest source of happiness? This thing can bring you happiness like nothing else. But this very same thing can cause you frustration and disappointment and depression like nothing else. What would you say that is?
Love.
Love. I hear many broken hearts. Love. I think so. Relationships, isn't it? Relationships are the greatest source of happiness when we have relationships. When you have a good relationship, you can deal with anything. Whatever may happen in life, but relationships keep us afloat. They keep us going. But those same relationships, when they break, when they become distanced, when we fail to see the connection in the same way, they also cause us great pain. So yes, I think so. Relationships and relationship and friendship. Actually, in every single relationship you have, there must be friendship. A guru may teach a disciple, but there's friendship in that relationship. Husband and wife may be together as partners, but there must be friendship. Someone may parent their children, but there must be friendship. So everyone needs relationship, and in every relationship there must be friendship. In the Sanskrit language, which is so advanced, there are many, many different words for a friend. In English we say your friend. But as we know, there are so many different types of friend. So in Sanskrit there are different words, bandhu, which means a friend who is like an acquaintance. Yeah, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And then there is mitra, one who is a friend by some level of social situation, you end up being friends. And then there are deeper types of friendship, like surid. Rid means the heart, and su means very good. So someone who is literally in their heart wishing well for you. These are some of the deeper types of friendship. So there's so much in the ancient scriptures about friendship, about how to connect. And we're living in an age which is the age of quarrel. People fight like anything. People fail to understand each other like anything. People are further and further apart. They say, you know why two people shout at each other even when they're right next to each other? Because although they're next to each other, they have to shout, because their hearts have become so far apart. Because their hearts are so far apart, although they're sitting next to each other, they have to shout to make up that space. So how to actually be close with others? Here we're also talking today about community. How to have community? Each of us have to have good relationships. So relationships is not easy. Woody Allen, he's a US, he's like a comedian. He said, me and my wife, I'm not just making husband-wife jokes. Nothing against marriage. Just to add that disclaimer. He said, me and my wife, we drive in different cars. We have different friends. We have different hobbies. We have a different daily schedule. We eat at different times. We're doing everything we can to keep our relationship together. Because sometimes as soon as people come together, there's always some argument, some difficulty. So today I was thinking, what can we learn from scriptures about friendship? And you know, in the there are many ways of connecting with Krishna. And it said that different personalities perfected their lives by connecting with Krishna in different ways. So there's an ancient verse. Shri Vishnu Shravane Parikshita Bhavet Vayashaki Kirtane Prahlada Shmarane Tadangri Bhajane Lakshmi Pritu Pujane. So in this verse is very beautiful. It explains there was one person who perfected his life by hearing about Krishna. Who was that? Parikshit, yes, for those of you who are new. Is anyone here for the first time, by the way? Or anyone new? Or okay, some of you are here for the first time. Okay, thank you so much for being open-minded and coming. So Parikshit was a great king, and at one point he was cursed to die in 7 days. And, you know, sometimes we ask people, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? So literally he had 7 days to live. So what he decided to do was give up everything, and he just went to the bank of the Ganges, the famous river, and there he just heard talks of Krishna, spiritual wisdom, spiritual narrations for the remaining time that he had, and in that way he absorbed his consciousness in transcendence and achieved perfection. It said that one person perfected their life by kirtan, glorifying Krishna. Who was that? Yeah, Vyasiki. Vyasiki is another name for Sukadev Goswami. So Parikshit heard, but he was hearing from who? Sukadev Goswami. One individual perfected their life by remembering Krishna. And who was that? Prahlad. Prahlada Shmarane. In whatever difficulty there was, sometimes it's difficult to remember Krishna, you know. It's difficult to remember our spiritual situation. One time one devotee said, Prabhupada, sometimes I forget Krishna. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said, you always forget Krishna. Sometimes you remember him. So Prahlad was always remembering Krishna. And Tadangri Bhajane, someone was always serving Krishna in a very menial way. Who was that? Massaging Krishna's feet. Lakshmi. Lakshmi, Tadangri, Bhajane. And then there was one person who perfected their relationship with Krishna by friendship.
Arjuna.
So then I was thinking when I read this verse that if we want to learn about friendship, then the connection between Arjuna and Krishna is very powerful to learn from. And perhaps the most beautiful interaction that they ever had in the history of their time together was the time when they had the conversation of the Bhagavad Gita. So then I was thinking, if you look at the conversation of the Bhagavad Gita and the way that Krishna and Arjuna have their conversation, it actually reveals to you many beautiful things about how to have a deep friendship and relationship with someone. So I'm just going to share with you today a few of those principles. And to make this really live, what I want you to do for one, like 30 seconds, is just close your eyes. You can do that now. Don't worry, we're not going to throw anything on you. Close your eyes for a minute, and I just want you to think about one relationship in your life that you feel like you need to improve on. And I want you to picture that person in your mind's eye. Who is that person? Maybe your spouse, your children, your teacher. Someone you work with, someone at the temple. Okay, you can see that person in your mind's eye. don't throw any darts at them or anything like that. Okay, so I'm going to try and give you a few principles from the Bhagavad Gita today about how Arjuna and Krishna had a beautiful relationship. And I want you, as we're going through these principles, to see whether any of these things may relate to your relationship with this person. See if any of it is relevant. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. So before we begin, I'll just say a few prayers and then we'll begin. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki. Krishna is trying to help Arjuna. And Krishna knows that his role on the chariot is not just to be a charioteer, but he is leading the chariot of Arjuna's life. But it's very interesting how Krishna takes up his role and his service to connect deeply with Arjuna. And as you read through the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, you'll learn so much about what it means to actually deeply connect with someone. The Bhagavad Gita is an amazing book, because over the years I realized you don't just learn deep theology through the Bhagavad Gita. That definitely you learn. Who am I? What is the goal of life? How to achieve that goal of life? Where the material world comes from? What is karma? Deep philosophical things you can learn. But at the same time, you can learn so many things about how to navigate this world, how to be a good leader, how to communicate, how to have a good conversation. And today we're going to talk about how to actually deeply connect with someone. The first very, very interesting thing about the Bhagavad Gita is that the Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. And you know, one of the most interesting facts is that in the first chapter, Krishna doesn't say really one word to Arjuna. Maybe he says one line. But practically for the whole of the first chapter, Krishna doesn't say anything to Arjuna. This is Krishna. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mamtu vedana kaschana. This is Krishna who knows past, present, future. Krishna who knows all living beings. But when Krishna is on the chariot with Arjuna and Arjuna has all this confusion, Arjuna has all these problems, Arjuna has all these difficulties, the most amazing thing is Krishna just lets him speak out his heart. Have you ever had a conversation with someone and by the time they're 10 seconds into what they're saying, you're like, okay, I know it, I know what you're going to say, this is what the answer is. The tendency to want to just come in and tell someone how it is so strong. But they say people don't know, don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. The first principle that the Bhagavad Gita teaches us in relationship building, in friendship building, is hearing brings understanding. If you really deeply want to connect to this person, think about the person that you were in your mind's eye. If you really want to deeply connect to them, you have to hear them. And hearing them doesn't simply mean to hear their words, that would be a good start. But hearing them means to really hear their heart. Unless you know someone's needs, their interests, and their concerns, you can't really have a deep relationship with them. And therefore, in the world today, what happens is that people try to connect, but they haven't spent the time actually deeply understanding the person they're trying to connect to. My mom used to tell me, God has given you two ears and one mouth. That should tell you something. I think she was just telling me to be quiet. But we should hear twice as much as we speak. Once there was someone who was having a very difficulty with his friend, arguments again, so he came to the minister and he said, I just don't understand my friend, he's just speaking so illogically, I just really don't get him. And then his minister said, do me one favor, I want you to go back and listen to everything he's saying closely. So the friend went back, his friend was still like da, da, da. So now he was listening really closely, carefully. He came back to the minister, he said, I'm even more confused now. It sounds even more illogical to me, what he's saying. The minister said, good. Now I want you to go back and listen to everything he's not saying. He was just like, how do you listen to everything that someone's not saying? He said, I want you to deeply try to understand the emotions, the hidden story, the background, the trigger which is causing him to say these things and act in this way. I want you to learn the art of hearing the unheard. And so he went back and he did that and he came and he said, now I get it. Now I understand. I still don't agree with him. But at least I can understand where they're coming from. I can feel his pain. So this is the very, very first beautiful lesson that Krishna teaches us in the Gita, that we really have to try to understand each other in a deeper way. Once there was a teacher and she was trying to teach the children counting, maths. So she said, here's one orange. And I give you another orange, how many do you have? And the child said, three. So I said, let's try again. One orange, another orange, how many? Three. So the teacher was like, this is simple. Here's one apple, here's another apple, how many do you have? Two. Great. Here's one orange, here's another orange, how many do you have? Three. The teacher just couldn't get it. She was so frustrated. And then the child said, but I have one orange in my lunch pack. So we get so frustrated with people, but we don't see the hidden orange. So for us, it just seems like, don't you get this? It's simple. But we're not seeing something that's very real for someone else. And so this is a great art, the art of how to hear the unheard. So Krishna knew, I know what Arjuna's going through. I'm in his heart. I understand all of his emotions. But Krishna was teaching us the first deep thing, that hearing brings understanding. And when we understand, we can connect more deeply. Then the interesting thing is, in the second chapter, after Arjuna has kind of said it all, then Arjuna's like, I also need some answers here, Krishna. So I know you've been silent and you've heard me out, but can you also now tell me some answers, like help me here? So in a very beautiful verse, Arjuna says, Karpanya dosho pahatasva bhava prachamitvam dharma shamuda cheta. Dharma shamuda is a very beautiful word. It means I have a dharma confusion. I have no idea about my purpose, my direction, my goal. And then Arjuna says, shishya steham. Now I am your disciple. Please instruct me. And the acharyas, they kind of read between the lines. And they say that when Arjun told Krishna that, can you be my guru? Then Krishna looked back at Arjun and was like, no, no, Arjun, you're fine. You don't need a guru. You're doing okay. You'll figure it out. Do you really, like, you really want me to be your guru? And Arjun had to say, no, no, Krishna, I want you to be my guru. Please, please instruct me. In other words, at no point in the Bhagavad Gita does Krishna impose himself on Arjun. If you really want to have a deep relationship with someone, don't try to force yourself upon that person. In other words, allow that person to open their heart and let you in. In the beginning, Krishna doesn't impose himself on Arjun. Even in the middle, when Krishna is giving all of his advice to Arjun, he doesn't impose himself. Because practically every time he gives Arjun some advice, he says, iti me mati. Iti me mati. What does that mean in English? This is my opinion. You can, it's kind of my opinion, is what I think. Like, I mean, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead who knows everything. But Krishna is not imposing, it's my opinion. And then right at the end of the Gita, once Krishna has given all this incredible out-of-the-world knowledge to Arjun, then Krishna says, Vimrasheta dasheshena yata icha tata guru. Now I've given you all the knowledge, think about it, analyze it, introspect on it, challenge it, and then do what you want to do. So beautiful. At no point in the relationship does Krishna impose himself on Arjun. So if you really want to have a deep relationship with someone, you can't force it. Of course, sometimes you're a parent or sometimes in your position of leadership, you need to impose your authority to do the job even when someone doesn't accept you. But the important thing in a relationship is to know, how much has this person invested their heart in me? If you give them more than the amount of heart that they've invested in you, then it will become an imbalanced relationship. And therefore, inspiration over imposition. This is really, really another beautiful learning that comes from how Krishna and Arjun connect in the Bhagavad Gita. After the second chapter, where Arjun has accepted Krishna as his guru, there's another very beautiful thing that happens through the dialogue of the Bhagavad Gita that helps us understand how to deeply connect with someone. But before I tell you that, I'm going to ask you a question. Imagine here for a moment I had an orange in my hand. Okay? You know, one of those oranges that you peel. And imagine I had a son and daughter. And I have one orange, but my son and my daughter both want the orange. Maybe this has happened to you. So I have one orange, I have nothing else, I don't have one in the lunchbox or anything like that. Just one orange in my hand, and my son and daughter, who I love equally, both want this orange. What should I do? Okay, so we have one option here, cut it in half. Any other answers?
Buy more from the shop.
Buy more from the shop. But in that moment, it's a moment of making a decision. What do I do? Cut it in half. Does anyone else have any other proposals as to how to solve this conundrum?
Ask them to maybe have a discussion to see.
Oh no, that's not possible. They want the orange and they want the orange. That's it. They want a full orange. There's no discussion here.
The history, who has got last time?
Oh wow, okay. That's a very democratic way of doing it. Thank you so much. I don't know if we keep records of how many oranges we gave our children. Yes, okay, here's a... Well, how old are you?
I'm
12. 12, okay.
You can divide into three pieces, one for you and one for...
Okay, wow, yeah, save one for yourself as well. Okay, very good. Yeah, because you've got to stay energized then. Yes, any other... Yeah?
You can just take out the juice and convince each of them that this juice is of one full orange and just give that sense.
Okay, so juice the orange and then give them a bit of juice and convince them that this is the essence. This is very creative. Thank you. Yes?
Just give it to your son.
Just give it to your son. Oh, wow. Okay.
If he loves his sister as much as you love your children, he will share. But he got the full orange.
And if he doesn't?
Well, then he did.
That's karma. No, I'm looking for one more answer. Yes?
Eat it yourself.
Okay, wow. Okay, can you give a purport to that? To maintain our faith in your spiritual...
So both of them, so none of them get the orange, you eat it yourself, and then like next time I'm going to buy both of you two oranges.
Okay, so no one gets an orange. Okay, Mahamad?
I would try to inspire one of the child to get more taste in giving it. And then maybe this child would be even more happy.
Okay, well, but they're not interested. They want it. Okay, last try. Okay, find someone else apart from them. Oh, see who's more... No, they're equally eager. Okay. All right, go on then. Try once more.
Lie to them, there is no...
Lie? Lie, there's no orange. Okay, no orange. It was just an illusion. It's Maya. No. You haven't asked the main question. No, you didn't ask. No. Okay. Ask them, why do they want the orange? Because if you ask the question, why do they want the orange? The girl will tell you, I want the orange peels so that I can make a cake. And the boy will tell you, I want the actual orange so I can have a juice. But you could have only come to that conclusion if you first asked them why they want the orange. The lesson here is that oftentimes when people have a conflict in a relationship, if we actually ask them what they're trying to achieve, then oftentimes we will see that there's a way to actually resolve the difference. There's actually a way to bring them together. There's actually a way in which I can fulfill your desire and I can fulfill what my purpose is without us having to clash. So what happens in the Bhagavad Gita is that after the second chapter, when Krishna and Arjun begin to have a conversation, Arjun has many questions. In one sense, Arjun has many differences with Krishna. Do you know how many questions Arjun asks Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita? 17. Now, if you think about it, that's quite a lot of questions compared to like how many verses there are. Sometimes Arjun asks questions like, Krishna, I don't understand what you're saying. Sometimes Arjun says to Krishna, I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't make any sense to me. And sometimes Arjun says, it makes sense to me, but I have no idea how to apply this in my life. In other words, Arjun has a difference of opinion with Krishna at many points in the Bhagavad Gita. But what Arjun keeps doing is he keeps having dialogue with Krishna. He keeps talking. You see, dialogue resolves differences. oftentimes what happens is because we stop the dialogue in a relationship, we don't actually share and try to understand whether there's a way of resolving and bridging the gap. Therefore, our relationships remain very, very distant. And so, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna never discourages Arjun from asking his questions, from raising his doubts, from addressing whatever uncertainties are there in his heart. Because relationships mean that we're not immediately going to be on the same page. Relationships take a lot of time and investment. We may come together through chemistry, but we stay together through commitment. We stay together through patience. We stay together by actually understanding people on a deeper level. And so Krishna exercises incredible patience in helping Arjun to reveal his mind, and therefore they connect much, much more deeply. And there are many more, but I'll just offer you one final one. So the first one, you remember, hearing brings understanding. The second one is inspiration over imposition. Don't impose yourself. The third one is dialogue resolves differences. Another beautiful, this is the last one I'll give you today, and maybe another time we can do more. But another beautiful one that Krishna shows in the Bhagavad Gita of how to connect deeply with someone is, I call it, step back before giving feedback. And what Krishna does in the Bhagavad Gita is that sometimes he praises Arjun with beautiful words, and other times Krishna honestly reveals where Arjun is going wrong and how his thought process is defective. Sometimes Krishna glorifies Arjun, and other times he corrects and chastises Arjun. And in any relationship, if you want it to go to its highest level, there has to be both of these things. These are your two beautiful almost assets at your hands to make a relationship very beautiful. You have to give appreciation, encouragement, positivity, and at the same time you have to give correction, feedback, improvement, and loving correction, loving words of improvement like that. So Krishna, he does that in a beautiful balance, because our tendency in a relationship is to go to one extreme or the other. We either give too many sweet words but without being honest about what we really need to tell that person, or what happens is we're really, really honest about what we need to tell that person and how they need to improve, but we haven't done the necessary relationship building of deposits in that relationship in order for them to really take it on in a beautiful way. And therefore, both of these aspects are very, very important. To have a beautiful relationship, there has to be encouragement and words of appreciation. Sometimes we don't do that enough. You know, someone in a relationship, we just take it for granted. People do so many nice things and we just make a mental note of it. But when they do something wrong, then we make sure they know about it. But Krishna, when he's liberal, he's generous with his kind words as well. Like Srila Prabhupada was very much like that, very encouraging. His disciple Shyamasundar Prabhu once came to him and he said, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm a fool." Prabhupada said, "Don't worry, we're all fools." He said, no, Prabhupada, I have to go to jail." Prabhupada said, "Don't worry, Krishna went to jail." I said, "What's the crime?" He said, "Prabhupada, I was dealing drugs." Prabhupada said, "I was also dealing drugs." Of course, Prabhupada was a pharmacist, different type of drugs. But he reflected later on how Srila Prabhupada was always very, very encouraging, very, very kind, very, very generous, very, very liberal, One German writer says, treat a person as they are and they'll remain as they are, but treat them as they can and should be and they'll become what they can and should be. So that was really Srila Prabhupada, so kind, so encouraging. So, but then when he had to also give some words of correction, he also gave words of correction. His servant remembers once that Srila Prabhupada in the middle of the night vigorously began ringing his bell, and the servant came running in. He said, Prabhupada, is everything okay? Prabhupada said, yes, everything is fine. Why are you sleeping? He said, it's the middle of the night, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, it's also the middle of the night for me, but I'm not sleeping. The devotee said, yes, Prabhupada, we had a very busy day. Prabhupada said, I had a busy day as well. The devotee said, but Prabhupada, you're a pure devotee. Prabhupada said, why are you not a pure devotee? He said, now he understood. Don't argue. He said, Prabhupada, what shall I do? Prabhupada said, go back to sleep. So Prabhupada was also challenging, he was also encouraging his devotees to stretch, to be better, to... So that's a beautiful relationship, like a potter. When they want to mold a pot, then what they do is they put one hand inside to support, and then on the outside they tap it. So if you simply tap but there's no support, then you'll break it. And if you hold it simply within but there's no tapping, you don't mold it. So in a relationship, the beauty of relationships is they help each person to bring out the best in themselves. And in order to do that, there has to be feedback. But before you give feedback, step back and make sure you're doing it in the right measurement. Make sure you're not harsh in a relationship. Harshness and overreaction in a relationship really breaks relationships. So like this, it's very, very beautiful. One thing I want to say is that maybe many of you were thinking of relationships, and maybe there sometimes are relationships where you try all of these things, but still it doesn't work. And sometimes in our life there are relationships that we just have to accept that maybe I need to let go of these relationships, at least for now. But we should only give up or let a relationship breathe for some time to one side once we've tried everything from our side. So like this, as we learn how Krishna and Arjuna connected very, very deeply, hearing brings understanding, inspiration over imposition, dialogue resolves differences, and what was the last step? Step back before giving feedback. And there could be many more. So when we read the Bhagavad Gita, remember that it's a multi-dimensional book. Yes, it will teach you about the goal of life and so many things, but it will also teach you about how to navigate life. Because Krishna, in everything he does, is wonderful. And Krishna teaches us how to have deeper relationship, how to have deeper friendship, and in this way, how to also have deeper community. So where we have communities where these things go on, then communities become very, very beautiful. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
So
thank you.
I'll hand over to His Holiness Acharya now.
I think, is it long enough? Hare Krishna, I think we all were very, very impressed by your wonderful presentation. There's still a little 20 centimeters, perhaps we can pull it, or What if you move a little? Good. Okay. I think that was very profound, and I would in fact like to guide you into an exercise. So we have heard now four ways to improve relationships, and the way we started out was our Keshava Maharaj asked us to think of one relationship where we feel there's room for improvement. Do you remember? Who of you was able to envision one personality? Oh, yeah. That is 1/5 of you. That's a little small number. We need a little bit more of you. Can I again ask the question of Keshava Maharaj? Is there a person which comes to your mind where you feel you can improve the relationship? Maybe a spouse, maybe a child, maybe your neighbor, maybe a person at your working place who gets on your nerves. Maybe yourself, your relationship with yourself could be disconnected at the moment. And as you think about that person, make a little music for you. Please go to our Maharaj's class, where he really offered four powerful ways that could help you to improve that relationship. Would you do me a favor and sit just straight for a moment? Take a few deep breaths in and out. And again, go into your heart and look for someone where you feel you can improve the relationship. Now move before them, or invite them on a chair before you. How is he dressed? Does he look at you? And now we'll start, and you're ready, a conversation where you perhaps asked him to talk about something and then understand it better. Listen to them. Or any other of the points you remember. Good, and to complete this, we could go on long. Let us all chant a mantra. Holy name of Lord Ram. Perhaps pray to Ram that he helps. I will say it one time alone. Deep inhale. deep inhale. Just talk very briefly, and then Maharaj and myself will take any questions from you. I want to tell you something which was very much in my heart when I came here. I walked to the temple, and in my mind's eye, I could understand, I could see, my God, last year we have 600 guests for Krishna's appearance day, and most of them did not fit into the temple, so we had to ask them to sit on the ground before us. In Berlin this is not a problem, the ground before the temple, and we distributed our Jamashtami feast as much as we had and could cook to all of them, to try to satisfy our guests, because that's one of our principles. When you come to the temple, you must be satisfied with the food which you take here, the prasadam. And I was thinking something which I have thought again and again. When Srila Prabhupada was with us, our spiritual master, he said, Berlin will be the spiritual capital of Europe. I can never forget this. Now, for a spiritual capital, this temple room is perhaps a little bit too small. We can decorate it very beautifully and make it appear very first class. But, yes. The windows in front tell a story how first class everything is. But I also know that to build a temple where we can receive more of you, more of the many interested people. Do you know there's so many airplanes coming each weekend for people from all over Europe who wish to go to Berlin to make an absolutely new experience. They didn't have it. Many of them are very open to spirituality. Many. So, in order to build a temple or find a temple which can accommodate all of these, I feel we first need to build another temple. And this other temple has very much to do with what Keshava Maharaj shared with us so beautifully today. We have to build a temple in relationships. I feel that we are on a very good way. There's more life, aliveness, more enthusiasm, more of this simple and wonderful Begeisterung, we say. Begeisterung means the spirit, it's a German word, the spirit has entered more and more into many, many more people. And if we can learn to build this immaterial building, the building with the relationships, I think this will become the temple with bricks and stones and cement and perhaps two bathrooms and one room for children. Not this, Jayaveda Maharaj called this little room where everything has to take place, the funny little room, you know. all this will come on the fundament of relationships. So before we go into the questions and answers, I want to bring you, actually, make a point. Once there was an ashram. It was at the banks of a river. Govinda Swami had come there. It was before an area which was infested by criminals who couldn't get along with each other. And he had built an ashram and then inside a temple. And just to be sure that nothing would happen, no disturbing elements would come into this ashram with the temple, he placed a chowkidar, that is a guard, before the entry gate. So it happened that one day a farmer came and said, "My dear chowkidar Prabhu, my dear guardian or doorman," it was a simple melon, it didn't have a coat on it, as this one, so I have to correct this melon. "You opened this place for me and you allowed me to come in for this service, that I could come, and you every day open the door for me. I have brought this beautiful honey melon from my field. It's my first honey melon. You can take later photos, but for now, please listen." So the chowkidar, the guard who opened the gate and closed it, felt, "What a nice melon. But this melon shouldn't really go to me. I bring it to Govinda Swami, the one who opened this ashram with the temple." And he brought it to Govinda Swami and said, "I never expressed what is in my heart, but I'm so grateful. You have given me and my family a meaning of life by making this ashram and this temple here as a sincere gesture of my appreciation. Your honey melon, it is for you." So Govinda Swami was happy about the words, but he was elderly, he didn't care so much about honey melon or this or that. He thought, there's someone who really needs it. It's that brahmachari, that monk who's already sick for 3 weeks. He needs some healthy vitamins. So he came to this brahmachari who was lying flat on his back, suffering, and he said, "Oh, my dear brahmachari, you need some vitamins. This, I never expressed to you how much we value your presence here. And take this honey melon, it will help you to get better soon." So the sick monk thought, "Wow, Govinda Swami came to me and appreciated me. I thought I'm useless because I cannot do any service at the moment. I have this bad leg. It has not become better. But I have someone in mind whom I would love to give this honey melon. It's Cook Prabhu. Cook Prabhu always cooks a porridge of oat flakes. And it's a little slimy, but it's just the right thing I need for my leg." So when Cook Prabhu came the next time, the cook, Brahmachari gave him this melon of appreciation. And my dear everyone, this is a long story. It would take me 1 year to tell it properly, but the honey melon on that day and for the next day also went around the ashram until it came back to the guard at the door. But that place was never the same any longer, because the appreciation had been given to every single member who felt valued, seen, understood, even on their sick bed, and who were very, very happy. So, this is the secret, one of the secrets. Maharaj has given such a wonderful presentation, but it was all about giving in the end. Giving an ear to someone, giving interest to someone, giving space to someone, and so on. And I'm sure if we take note of what Keshava Maharaj left us with, and the next time when he comes, we will ask him to continue, because perhaps we didn't understand totally. But I'm sure if we let the honey melon in our community circulate around, it will build that bond which is necessary, that fundament which needs to be laid in the heart of our community, which will carry the temple which we perhaps wish to have eventually at a time when our rental contract runs out here. Yeah? There are three things on which we can take care of, three levels. One is just the physical level, where we give things, food, and so on. And the emotional level, where we give an open ear to someone. But there is also another level which is important. That is, after the physical needs are concerned, are taken care of, especially spiritually minded people, there is the great need for purpose, a purpose in life, something where you can contribute. I mean, eating and sleeping and nice emotional, kindness, that is, unfortunately, it's not there in all parts of our society. But what is very important is that people get a good purpose they can live for. And finally, to give is a relationship with God, with Krishna, the Sanatana Dharma. So this, I think, are the three needs we can take care of, the physical and emotional needs. But then the need for purpose, what gives my life enough purpose that I get up out of the bed and feel enthusiastic, feel something like a glowing yes in my chest. And then something which I think temples are very, very well, the relationship to our to the Lord, no? Sanatana Dharma. So I think you will forget many things of this lecture. Please do not forget what Keshava Maharaj shared with you. See a person before your eye and see what you can do to improve. Help them in that relationship. Listen perhaps at the recorded lecture of Maharaj. It is there on the internet. And from my thing is, become a giver, no? Let the honey melon circulate. If you didn't understand the message, I have it another. It could be also the melon. The mango. It's really not important what is the substance here. What is important is the giving nature, no? The giving time physical things like food, giving a perspective so that people can see their purpose in life, and helping them to develop their relationship with the Lord. I could have also brought strawberries or also Spargel. It's not about the things, it's about the attitude. Thank you very much, and Hare Krishna. So I suggest that now we see, we have a little interaction. We will have microphones for you if you wish to ask the question. I'm getting here something. Please repeat. Yeah. When you get a question, Maharaj, please repeat the question so that for the recording. Yes, we have a microphone. We circulate this microphone. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you both for your enlightened words. I have a question regarding this relationship towards yourself, as I find this is the most difficult. And could you tell me something from the Gita? How can I develop that the most? I think with another person, you can go to them, you can talk to them. But even envisioning yourself is often so difficult. So could you say something more about that, please? Thank you.
Would you like to move in, Mark?
Let us first get this clear technically. We park your question. So what?
Could you use the microphone?
Oh, okay. Use the
different mics. There's different mics.
So we have to use this one. Okay, sure. So
this goes also there.
This one goes here.
Yeah.
Would you like to bring it on that mic?
Should I?
Yes.
Because I mentioned this.
I think you just need to repeat the question.
Yeah. Yeah. Our Malini has asked a very, very good question about self-care. No, should we should have a relationship to ourselves, and in that relationship, we should take care of our needs, our own personal needs. Yes, I came in contact with this point when I was really, really finished after a surgery, and the doctor said, "Monk, you better take care of yourself, otherwise you won't be for a long time with us any longer." It didn't sit well with me at that time, because I was a very, I thought, no, just giving, I'm insignificant, unimportant, and so on. But later I did understand that if you're disconnected with yourself, with your mind, with your emotions, you do something what is called spiritual bypassing. You are not taking care of an issue which is there, which everyone sees except for you, and you give very good spiritual reason and bypassing it, and this will not go for a long time. It won't go good for a long time. So I personally have developed a model from this. It's called the Tree of Life. This name, I understood, is very, very prevalent. When I tried to reserve that as a brand in internet, I saw, my God, there's so many trees of lives. But what I mean with the Tree of Life is that a person, in order to be in a position that he can contribute, must also care for himself spiritually, physically, emotionally, and so, and then he can be fit for social work. Consider a tree. It has roots which no one sees. This is your spiritual practice. You do it in the morning hours. I heard there are some people who do spiritual practice with a camera and they put it on Instagram, but that is more, that's not the idea. You do it invisible. These are your roots. This is your time alone with Krishna. Then the next element, physical well-being and emotional well-being. There's lot to be said about it, but I want to leave it with these things. Physical well-being is food, sleep, and movement. Emotional well-being happens when you have friends, relationships, when you have a purpose to which you wake up with happiness, and when you stop negative self-talk, which many people unfortunately do. I'm not good enough, and so on. When you take care of yourself spiritually, physically, emotionally, then you have fruits to offer, like the tree. A healthy tree has good cherries. It has mangoes. It has other things to give, but a tree which is depleted cannot give, at least not for long. At least not for long. Good. It's not in your interest, not anyone else's interest, not even Krishna's interest, if you burn yourself from from left and right, so to say.
Question also about relationships. On the one hand, we have this verse, Srinatha Pitsu, teaching us to be more humble than the tree, or more humble than the grass. But this could also mean that if we don't tell another person, oh, like you behave, it's not okay, then we train them to act badly towards us. But it was my experience that it's not good to always just be humble and say nothing. If we don't say anything, then we can also not communicate our needs. No one can listen if we don't say anything in this relationship. How can we bring this together, to be humble on one side, but also to set boundaries if necessary, and to make a thing work.
So just to repeat the question, on one hand we should be humble in a relationship, we should take ourselves out of the center, and at the same time in a relationship we have needs, we feel that there should be a certain reciprocation in the way we are, and if we don't communicate those needs, then sometimes people can take advantage of us. And at the same time, when we communicate those needs, we want to make sure we're remaining humble. So how do you communicate needs and at the same time stay humble? Is this the question?
Yeah, and also to say if someone is
doing something
badly,
wrong.
Yeah. And it was badly, not just say nothing and be humble.
Yeah.
I know that there's a thing, if I tolerate this, then the other person gets my bad karma if I don't criticize. This is nice for me and bad for the other person, but that's not good for the relationship, I think.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, so speaking in a relationship and communicating needs doesn't have to be contrary to being humble in that relationship. To be humble in a relationship means you come together in that relationship for the purpose of maximizing your service to that person, your service together to others, and your service together to God. To be humble means you're acting in a way to maximize your ability to serve. And sometimes in your ability, in your endeavor to maximize your ability to serve, you need to communicate needs. In other words, if you communicate with someone you love that I need this, I need that, it's not necessarily contrary to humility, because by them understanding what your needs are and you providing for each other, you become more equipped to serve each other and to serve Krishna in a better way. So as long as the goal is always service, it can never be contrary to humility. It becomes contrary to humility when I become the center and my selfish desires become the goal. But in any relationship, there needs to be communication, there needs to be correction, as I mentioned, step back to feedback. In a relationship, we're also sometimes speaking to help that person also improve in their service. So sometimes if someone is doing something not so nice and I call it out, then I may be being humble also in the sense that I'm doing it as a service to them, so that they can improve in their relationship and their own character and their own devotion. So being humble doesn't mean you become a mute, it doesn't mean you become a doormat, it doesn't mean you become kind of completely non-emotional and without any feelings. It just means that you take yourself out of the center and act always for the purpose of increasing selfless service. Does that help?
Thank you very much.
Add to that.
No, you said it very nicely. Yeah, it's nice. There are more questions. Mm-hmm. Come, please. Maybe we should go to the back. Yes, but we also saw you. You will also be the next one. Next one. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. I just wanted to ask, what is the role of family in progression on a dharmic path? Like in modern days, we see most of the people are moving towards individualism rather than being connected to a socially enriched family culture, what we had in, say, days of our fathers or grandfathers. Like, I think it's one of the deterioration which we are facing right now, because in the absence of that family web or family culture, we are slowly digressing from the path of dharma. I guess. I mean, could you just enlighten us on that?
So the question is, in today's culture, the family unit and people to staying together as a family is becoming more and more rare. And what effect does that have on spirituality? Yeah, it's a fact today that people can't live together. People just find it very, very difficult to share the same space with others. People don't have tolerance, people don't have patience, people don't have flexibility. And the whole world now is about personal space. I want my own personal space. It's interesting, Eastern culture is still very communal, you know. Like, and if you're coming from the West to an Eastern culture, sometimes it can feel a little bit too communal. Like, I need some space here, you know, this is like... So all of you are sitting here together, many people would find this a little like, okay, I need some space here. You see, even here on a train, if someone walks on into a carriage and there's only a few people in the carriage, they will walk where they have like 5 seats around them spare. You know, because people, they just can't live together. But actually, community and family is said to be one of the most important aspects in one's spiritual development. Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya sadhu sang Krishna prema janma deho puna mukhya ang. The Shastra says the very root cause of the awakening of devotion to Krishna is the practicing of that devotion in the community of others. And the interesting thing is, what it says in that verse is Krishna prema janma deho. And even when you've perfected it, even when you have love for Krishna, puna mukhya ang, the ability to be around others and be with others remains the foremost practice. Spirituality is never practiced in isolation, because spirituality means love, love means relationship, and relationship means closeness. Family is such a beautiful thing. In the Mahabharata, it said it takes a whole community, it takes a whole family to bring up a child. Because when you live in a family, you don't just have your mother and father, but you have grandparents, you have cousins, you have so many other and each of them give you a different ingredient. So it's so sad nowadays that people can't live together, that people grow up in isolation. They miss out on so many relationships, they miss out on so many beautiful interactions. And therefore the Krishna Consciousness Movement is meant to... And that's why I talked about this topic today. Because the Bhagavad Gita teaches us about how to go beyond this world. But how can we go beyond this world if we don't know how to interact in this world? How can we enter the family of the spiritual world if we don't know how to have family here? How can we relate in relationships of love there if we're walking around avoiding everyone because we can't get along? And therefore the Bhagavad Gita also teaches us on this human level how we... So the Mahabharata is beautiful. You hear about how the Pandavas grow up in this palace, you know, where they have their mother and their father and their uncles and their teachers, and it's so beautiful. So yes, in this world we really have to learn how to relate to each other. We are living in a world which is full of impersonalism. And one time one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, why do you always talk about impersonalism? That philosophy is like not so... Prabhupada said, you're an impersonalist. Because it's not just the philosophy, impersonalism, that God is a light. It's also a culture, a mindset whereby we don't know how to relate to others. So we've become so awkward in our social dealings because of the culture that we're living in. We're more and more connected, but we're further and further apart. So this is spirituality, and spiritual communities have this responsibility as well. Not just to show the world about amazing philosophy, but to also show the world how to beautifully relate to each other. Srila Prabhupada, one of the devotees went to get his astrology done in Navadvip, and then he came back. So he said, Srila Prabhupada, I just got your astrology done. So Prabhupada said, oh, what did he say? He said, Prabhupada, the astrologer said, this person, he has the ability to build a house in which the whole world can live. So Prabhupada said, yes, that is a fact. He said, yes, that is my mission. So Prabhupada wanted to create a house in which the whole world could live. And that means a house in which people know how to relate to each other. And so community, family, living together, this is so much a part of spiritual life. Some thoughts.
Thank you, Maharaj. Just again, on the topic of relating, despite many good experiences of rendering service, I notice within myself when I'm asked to do service, when I'm asked to meet someone and have some interaction with them, I notice still that my initial response is a negative one. Ah, this is going to be long. This is going to be a burden. This is going to be difficult. This is going to be boring. This is going to be, etc., etc. And time after time, and we just had 6 weeks in India of experience of that, more or less every time the situation proved itself very positive, despite challenges. But then the next one comes up, hey, could you meet this person and give them this and this? Ah, oh, that will be difficult. What? How can we finally approach a situation, at least with neutrality, if not positivity? At least neutrality.
Your question is very endearing because it has that element of absolute truthfulness to it. See, when I can only give a generic answer. I understand you. I was also not willing to interact with many people, knowing well that it will be this, it will be that, it will be the other thing. I think what, whenever we do something in spiritual life, we have to see a purpose in it. Why am I doing it? And at the moment we see the purpose in it, it becomes a total different thing. For instance, when I remember I was in one temple and I asked, and people asked us, the people were around us, the neighbors said, oh, that's where everyone acts without getting paid. That was how we were known, you know. Everyone is working so hard, but they are unpaid laborers. So that was one understanding they had. Now, if you would ask me or any devotee, they would say, "No, we are not unpaid laborers, but we are doing service for Krishna, and we are getting the greatest price." That is love of Godhead. We are getting the greatest payment. So it's a different perspective altogether. When you do anything, you should know what is the purpose of it. Otherwise, anything could become a burden. Chanting your rounds could become a burden to you. Oh no, again, sitting down and chanting. And for many, or again, I'm asked to do something, or I'm going out and I'm talking to people. But if you know this is good for my purification, this is good for my spiritual advancement, then the very same thing which looked like a burden will become a burden of love. It will become very, very nice, and you will be very happy doing it. But if you lose your why, why in spiritual life, then everything you do are just, you go through the movements, and some of them will not be pleasant for you any longer. Yes. Any more questions? Do you enjoy this session? Is it good? I see some people coming and going, but I think this is natural. Maybe we should take care, Vaibhav, that all people get some prasadam, you know, when they go. They are taking care. Good, good. No one should leave with an empty stomach from here. Yes. There are more questions, I think. Yes, our Mataji here had a question. Or Sadashiva, did you have your... Then let us Sadashiva... Maybe we go to Sadashiva. Should we go first the Mataji and then you? Yes? Good. I must introduce to you this Sadashiva with the...
canned heat outlook. yes, he got this place. He was a long time the temple president. Very, very amazing seva he did. So, first, your good name?
Plon.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
yes.
Okay, so as far as I understood, the base of every relationship should be friendship. So let's say there is a situation in which there is a relationship that's based on friendship, but this relationship shifts due to circumstances or needs, and it becomes labeled, it becomes defined by, and for example, like a, first there is friendship and then this friend becomes our mentor. So how to deal with the fact that this relationship that was once equal is not equal anymore? So not equal, but that's the wrong way to use. There's like authority,
yeah.
Like a student and a teacher in a way. So how to deal with that?
So sometimes we may have a relationship or friendship, and then later on it transforms into another type of relationship in which they become an authority figure. So how do we deal with that? Well, again, this happens in the Bhagavad Gita. Because to be honest, Krishna is Arjuna's charioteer. Now, a charioteer is not even an equal. A charioteer is a servant. On the chariot, Arjuna should be the one giving the orders to Krishna. You know what it said on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, on any battlefield, it's so noisy that when the warrior wants to tell the charioteer where to go, then they can't just say left, right, because it's too noisy. So you know what they do? The warrior gives them a good kick on the right, and that means go right. And they have to give them a good kick on the left, go left. This is the position of a charioteer. That's why when the Brahmin, he saw the picture of Krishna becoming the charioteer of Arjuna, he began to cry. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "Because I can't imagine the Supreme Lord who's taken such a humble position out of love for his devotee." So that same relationship then undergoes a 180 degree turn. Because Arjuna's supposed to be giving the orders to Krishna, but then Arjuna turns the whole table and Krishna becomes his guru. So my point was that in every relationship there must be friendship. But in some relationships the friendship is the predominant rasa. But sometimes relationships change because people change. Relationships change because situations change. Relationships change because our needs change. And therefore, when someone changes and becomes a more authoritative figure in your life, we can respect that that is a good thing for the situation, that is a good thing for the need of the day, that is a good thing in order to increase our service moving forward. But some element of friendship must always remain. It's explained even in a guru-disciple relationship. Guru sudrida, saurida. That the guru is also the friend of the disciple. Because unless there's friendship between a guru and a disciple, how can there be that intimacy and meeting of hearts that can allow the gift to fully transfer? And so when a relationship changes, we should understand, yes, the material world is a dynamic place. As Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage, and each one of us are actors. And in our time, we play many, many roles, and we have our entrances and exits. So this world is a transitory place. You know, at one point, someone who was my teacher may become my friend. someone who's my friend may become my teacher, someone who I was very distant with becomes very close, someone who I was close with may move into a different space. It's always changing. But we always keep the friendly spirit and the meeting of hearts. In every relationship there must be a meeting of hearts, and that's the most important thing. And other things are roles, and roles change. I don't know if this helps.
It does, thank you.
Hare Krishna. Keshava Maharaj, I would like first to express my appreciation for your classes and your ongoing teachings, which for me make it very easy to relate to Bhagavad Gita, amongst other things, in a way that feel that they help me in my day-to-day struggles, not just on the spiritual side, but also in all aspects of life. My question is that when I try to read Prabhupada's books, I feel myself often struggling to relate to Prabhupada's words and purports in a way that make it so relatable as when you explain it and other teachers explain it, and that often leads to me rather spending time listening to classes or looking for guidance, let's say self-help guidance elsewhere. So do you have any tips on studying Prabhupada's books to really get on this deeper kind of understanding?
Sorry about that. Thank you so much. Thank you for all your years of service and for giving us all a space where we can come together. We're indebted. I should repeat the question. So sometimes we feel Srila Prabhupada, his books, sometimes it's difficult for us to study the books, sometimes it's difficult for us to read Srila Prabhupada's words and also interface with them in such a way that it allows us to navigate through our daily life and what could be the tips for understanding and delving deeper. I hope I've conveyed it. One scholar, when he was writing about Srila Prabhupada and how Srila Prabhupada wrote his books, he made one very interesting observation which I very much liked. He said Srila Prabhupada in his life, he played two roles. He was on one hand a messenger, and on another hand he was a mother. In order for Srila Prabhupada to implant the tradition of Krishna consciousness into a foreign place where people had very little understanding, Srila Prabhupada had to play both of these roles. He had to be a messenger of the absolute truth, and at the same time he had to be a mother to actually help people to actually grow up and nurture them. So what he was saying is that often when you read Srila Prabhupada's books, it's very much in the mood of Srila Prabhupada the messenger. And therefore sometimes people read Srila Prabhupada's books and sometimes they say it's very strong, it's very philosophical, it's almost very absolute. But we have to understand that because Srila Prabhupada was coming to implant a philosophy, he had to make what we call the tattva, or the absolute truth, the siddhanta, the pure conclusion. He had to make it crystal clear. And therefore, sometimes in his books, it can feel very black and white. It can feel very strong, very absolute. And sometimes that turns people off because it feels a little... But what they don't understand is that there's another side to Srila Prabhupada. And when we hear about Srila Prabhupada, how he interacted with his disciples, how he taught them to apply scriptures in their life, and how he built this Krishna consciousness movement by living with these young enthusiastic people and growing them up, then we see the other side of the author. And when we see the heart of the author, and how the author acted in their life, and the love and the devotion and the encouragement and the incredible liberality of what they did, and then we come back to read the words, then we read something very different. So what I often share with people is that you can read Srila Prabhupada's books, but you should also read about Srila Prabhupada. Because when you know the author, then the words of the author have a different impact on your heart. So I would say that's one thing. And the other thing is, I think, you know, our parampara is, with every generation, unfolding the Siddhanta according to the time, place and circumstance. Not unfolding, applying the Siddhanta according to time, place and circumstance. We're a living theology. This is living wisdom. This is wisdom that breathes. And as time changes and as situations change, we have to show the eternality of the philosophy by showing how it relates to every single need, interest and concern of the world around us. And I think when we just come together, we discuss, we... what I often do is, nowadays I'm in airports a lot, so I just hang out in bookshops. And I kind of see what people are reading. And I see what's on people's minds, what are they looking for. And it's so amazing because when I go into bookshops and I see all of these things, I'm like, Krishna talks about this. But what the modern authors have been able to do is they've been able to unpack it and present it and share it with people in such a way that when they wake up tomorrow morning, there's something they've got to do and there's some transformation they experience. And therefore people gravitate towards that. So self-help is the biggest thing now. But what I often say is that many of the books in Waterstones, they give you a lot of help, but maybe there's not so much self in there. There's not so much soul. And maybe we haven't managed to unpack our scriptures, which have so much soul and so much self, in such a way that it actually helps people. Like, I was in the airport the other day and I was just browsing through this book, you've heard of it, The 5 AM Club. So I'm reading through this book, like The 5 AM Club. And basically, the author's just like telling everyone to come to Mangal Aarti. He's like, oh, that's what I'm thinking in my mind, you know? But he's been able to present it in such a logical way with scientific evidence. But he's basically giving a principle that's talked about in the scriptures, which is wake up, rise with the sun. More energy, more creativity, more productivity. So I think again, like I said, Krishna, when he wanted to connect with Arjuna, hearing brings understanding. And I think a lot of it is just hearing what's going on in the world, hearing what's going on in people's hearts, hearing what's going on in our own hearts, and then looking at the scriptures, discussing with those who are diving deep and really trying to make the connections. Yeah, it's beautiful. And I think it gives us that faith that we don't... we can benefit from all literature, but ultimately all the ideas are there. These were some ideas. I'm sure there's so much more to say on studying scripture, but these were just some thoughts. Hope that helps. Thank you for your nice question. I don't know how we're doing. Time.
So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I think maybe I should ask Vaibhav, how is the program continuing?
So we'll do the Gaurarti now, if no more questions.
Yes.
Then after that, yeah, then Prasad.
After the Prasad, okay. Are we ready to start the evening? Yes. Well, thinking Mangal Aarti and evening Aarti. Fine. Perhaps you want to announce. Thank you all very much for making this session so, bringing your questions there and Let us invite our Keshava Maharaj more and more to come to Berlin.
So let us thank our His Holiness Sachin Swami Maharaj and His Holiness Swayam Bhagwan Kesha Swami.